From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Simon. How you doing? It's Thursday afternoon, which means it's just after 5 o'clock, and it's time for the Richie Allen Radio Show. Nice to be with you as usual. You can tweet the programme right now. On Twitter, it's at Richie Allen Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome one and all, welcome one and all. I hope you are in good form. I know I just said that, but I do mean it. Thursday, 15th of July, 2020. And I've got Tony Gosling joining the programme this hour. The one and only Tony Gosling, Bilderberg.org. And of course, thisweek.org.uk, former BBC journalist and top guy. Later on in the programme, the meteorologist and physicist Piers Corbyn will join me. I look forward to that too. Lot to talk about with Piers, including new climate change stuff. New climate change claims by certain experts. Apparently the science is settled once and for all. Well, we'll see about that. We'll talk to Piers Corbyn in hour two. Right, yes, and there you go. I've got a new pair of cans on. It's always very strange when you use something new. I've had a pair of cans for about 4 years. I'm using new ones because the ones I was using hitherto blew up. So they didn't blow my head off at the same time, thankfully. So I'm getting used to a new pair of cans. We'll have to adjust to one another. So we will. Hey, let's look down the news today. Job figures announced today. Unemployment figures. 650,000 jobs were lost in the period between March and June. And another 500,000 people are expected to be told around September time that they don't have any work to return to. Summer's going to be far worse, you see. And we're being told, wait till September, October, when they announce figures of unemployment. Then it's going to be catastrophic. Various programmes today have had various experts on talking about the figures and how they expect retail to be very hard hit in the coming weeks and months. And of course, not just retail, but leisure as well. It's bad, right? Lots to talk about before Tony Gosling joins me. Funny, when I announced Tony on Twitter today, a female listener said she had Tony to thank for waking her up with his Bilderberg research and his work on the BCFM radio, of course. And I was thinking maybe we'd be all better off asleep. Maybe there's a lot of animosity now towards the researchers who did the legwork, you know, in terms of waking us up, you know. If things keep getting any worse, and they might do, maybe they won't. Let's be optimistic today. Ike and Maxwell and Max Egan will be running for their bloody lives. What did you wake us up for, you bastards, might be the thing going forward. I don't know. Now, scientists have revealed what they say is unequivocal evidence of the influence of greenhouse gases on the planet. The study examined the recent record-breaking temperatures in the Arctic and concluded they would have been almost impossible without the influence of climate change caused by humans. It also found that the prolonged Siberian heat wave from January to June this year would only have happened less than once in every 80,000 years without climate change. Sky News is all over this, and they spoke to Dr. Friederike Otto. She is the lead on the study. You'll hear the question first, then you'll hear the lead researcher.
How does this study offer more unequivocal evidence that climate change does exist compared to other studies?
The event that we have looked at, this prolonged heat over a very large part of Siberia for the first 6 months of this year, that would have been basically impossible to happen without human-induced climate change. So it is really, we are seeing something new here that we would not have seen if we had not burned all these fossil fuels over the last 250 years.
Yeah. Although she doesn't sound very convincing, right? Doesn't sound very convincing. We'll talk to Piers Corbyn about that a bit later on. But what interested me, dear listener, gather round the campfire, let me tell you. The scientists who basically released this report are the World Weather Attribution Initiative. That's what they're called, the World Weather Attribution Initiative. So I did a bit of a quick click around on the old website, you know, bit of a click around there, right? And I found that the World Weather Attribution Initiative has only got really one main partner, according to its website, and it's the Environmental Change Institute at the University of Oxford. So I went there. I did a bit of clicking around again, a bit of clicking around on the old website. So I went to the Environmental Change Institute, University of Oxford, which is a partner with this World Weather Attribution, and I found that the senior researcher at Oxford's Environmental Change Institute is a woman, you might find this hard to believe now, is a woman whom used to work for Bill Gates. Would you believe that? That's a fact. And I've just lost her name. I'll get the name back in a moment because it's very important. I'm having a week at this. Do you know that? Things are happening on screen that shouldn't be happening. And I'm losing my notes and stuff like that. But yeah, the World Weather Attribution Initiative has got one partner, and it is the Environmental Change Institute at the University of Oxford. That's headed up by a woman called Dr. Liza. Dr. Liza something or other. And amazingly enough, and I don't make it up, she was formerly managing grants to improve the environmental sustainability for agriculture systems and risk management for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You couldn't make it up. And you don't have to be a genius to find this stuff. You've just got to go looking. Right, so there you are. World Weather Attribution Initiative says climate change, man-made climate change is real. We have the evidence. Their main partner is Oxford University, their environmental change group, which is run by a Gates woman. Billy Gates is very busy these days, isn't he? Vaccines, climate change, overpopulation, implantables and what have you. I bet you Billy's meetings with these legions of academics and scientists he controls take place on remote islands. I bet you they do. And I bet you if you smuggled a microphone and a camera into one of these meetings, it might just sound a little bit something like this.
Disciples of the watch, I stand before you in the name of the one true God who is cast out from heaven but is alive in me. Do you hear me? I now command you to seek out and destroy the child, and I shall reign forever.
With vaccines.
I now command you to seek out and destroy the child.
Mad stuff this, right? Bill Gates, everywhere, vaccines, implantables, overpopulation, introducing biotech to third world farmers to give them Terminator seeds, basically Monsanto. He's everywhere, Bill Gates. I know many of you know this, but for many of you, you'll be hearing it for the first time. Listen, more on climate change with the one and only Piers Corbyn a little bit later on in this programme. A lot of news coverage of Shamima Begum, the UK citizen, the ISIS bride, the jihadi bride who went off to Syria to be part of the ISIS caliphate there. She will be allowed back into the UK, apparently, to contest the revocation of her citizenship. She was born here, you see, and judges said she should be allowed back and that you can't just relieve a person of their citizenship without giving them due process. So a lot of far-right interest in that today online. And the big story of the afternoon, and they led with it at the top of the hour, FSN, and this is Dominic Raab, the Foreign Secretary, saying that Russia almost certainly tried to interfere in the UK general election back in September through illicitly acquired documents, right? The documents on US-UK trade discussions emerged online and were used by the Labour Party in the campaign. You might remember Jeremy Corbyn brandishing these documents at a press conference and bragging that the documents proved that the NHS was going to be on the table in any UK-US trade agreement. So today we've been told that it was the Russians. The Russian government was behind it, or Russian actors. Russian actors. Let's hear from Sky News reporter Kate McCann on this particular story. A lot of Russian stories in the news today.
This is the government saying that they've completed the first stage in an investigation that has two stages to it. This relates back to the election last year. If you cast your mind back just to December, when there was, of course, that general election, at the time, Labour held a big press conference, which ended up being quite controversial because they talked about some leaked documents, which they claimed suggested the UK government had been in trade talks with the US and that might well put the NHS at risk. Now, this was smack bang in the middle of a really controversial, hard-fought general election campaign. Jeremy Corbyn, of course, leading that for the Labour Party. And at the time, the government was so frustrated by it, Boris Johnson, they denied it. They said they would launch an investigation. They wanted to know who had leaked these documents. You can see the Labour, former Labour leader, holding up those documents there. They wanted to know how they'd come into the public domain and who had been pushing them on the internet. Well, today, we now know the answer to the first part of that question, because the government is saying they are almost certain that Russian actors, not necessarily the Russian state, had been amplifying those documents which had been leaked online many months before. And this had all happened in that midst of that general election campaign.
Yeah, right. So what do both political parties, there's only two really in this country, what does the Labour Party and the Conservative Party have to say about it? Dominic Grieve is a former Attorney General and also a former chair of the Intelligence and Security Committee. Here's Dominic Grieve on the allegations that Russia was somehow behind the leak of this document, the one that talked about the US-UK trade talks.
Well, there's nothing new about this. Russia has been seeking both to obtain information by hacking into Western internets, and also to spread disinformation by the same method for a considerable period of time. It's absolutely in keeping with Russian tactics and, I suppose, strategy, one might say, although sometimes one does wonder exactly what the entire strategy may be. But none of this comes as any surprise at all. Russia is a serial offender in this respect.
In terms of surprises, what about the information that's been released by the government today relating to the 2019 election, to this document that Jeremy Corbyn waved about, and the fact that there was clearly Russian involvement in spreading that information?
Again, I'm not surprised about that.
Yeah, he's not surprised about that. There are two Russian stories today, the one you just heard and another one which alleges that the Russians have been trying to basically steal the vaccine research, the COVID-19 vaccine research of other countries. The UK's National Cybersecurity Centre has claimed, along with the Canadian Communication Security Establishment and the Americans, are claiming they have evidence that the Russians or Russian intelligence services have been trying to steal information relating to COVID-19 vaccine development. It's extraordinary stuff, this. Very little proof, of course, is being offered anywhere. So Chris Bryant, then, the Labour MP, who is the chair of the All-Party Russia Committee. What does he think about these allegations against Russia?
I've been saying, as chair of the All-Party Group on Russia, for years that the Russians have been trying to interfere in our politics, in our fundraising for political parties, in our referendums, including the Brexit referendum, and in general elections. So it doesn't come to any surprise to me. The only thing that comes as a surprise is that the government has chosen to reveal this today, because if they actually thought that last year, you'd have thought that they would have wanted to publish the Russia report before the general election.
That's a very good question, one that nobody seems to be asking today. Dominic Grieve, Chris Bryant there. So everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet with respect to the allegations against Russia. The Russians are very, very, very bad. And we're very, very good. And the Russians are hell-bent on interfering in the democratic processes of other countries. And they kill their own citizens overseas and all of this. They're stealing COVID vaccine research and they're interfering in elections. Very little proof, of course, offered. I'm not sure there was a Kremlin response, but I know the Russian ambassador to the UK did say that the stories were nonsense, but you might say, well, he would say that, wouldn't he? Okay. Speaking of vaccines and vaccine research, Nicola Sturgeon was on the Robert Peston ITV podcast this afternoon. He's ITV's political editor, I think. And they were speaking about vaccine research, and Nicola Sturgeon dropped a bit of a clanger, made a bit of a mistake. But you wonder if the mistake was more of a Freudian slip. Here she is, Scotland's First Minister.
Although I prefer to be cautiously optimistic. As you say, there have been encouraging signals coming from Oxford, so I have everything crossed that sooner rather than later we will see a vaccine be possible. Whether that is a vaccine that gives long-lasting protection against the virus or shorter-term protection, we don't know yet. And what the quantities of that would be that would be available if it does prove to be effective, we don't know yet either. All governments in the UK are advised on who should be vaccinated for what and what groups of the population by the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, and we'd want to take expert advice. But I think it is at least possible, if not probable, that the older sections of the population would have priority for a vaccine if we had to prioritise in that way, because we know that...
What do we know?
That age has been one of the key factors in determining people's likelihood to become seriously ill and die from this vaccine.
She didn't say that, did she? But she actually did. It's quite funny. And Peston doesn't pick up on it. I suppose he thinks it's just a harmless mistake.
Age has been one of the key factors in determining people's likelihood to become seriously ill and die from this vaccine.
Yeah.
Now, your own Scottish Test and Trace programme...
Yeah, he just didn't hear it. Most presenters are like that these days. They don't listen to what they're being told. Sturgeon said age is a determining factor when you factor in who's most likely to die or become injured from having this vaccine. Indeed. Nicola Sturgeon speaking to Robert Peston there. Again, staying with the vaccine for a moment, Professor Danny Altman from Imperial College London, he's an immunologist, and he's working on the search for a vaccine. He was on Sky News with Jane Secker today, and she asked a very good question about the possibility that any vaccine might quickly be useless, as the coronavirus will most probably mutate, or might mutate, over the winter. And the guy shuts her right down. It's very interesting.
And in terms of a vaccine, I mean, you know, we get the flu jabs every year, but people always say, well, there'll be different strains of the flu, it won't protect all of you. Any vaccine that protects against COVID-19, is the big concern that next year a different strain could simply come onto the horizon?
Good question. No, but I think
he jumps right in there. He doesn't let her finish the question. Staggering, really, isn't it? Because it's a very, very, very good question.
Could simply come onto the horizon?
Good question. No, but I think of all of our concerns...
Is the big concern that next year a different strain could simply come onto the horizon?
Good question. No, but
shut up, love. Shut up. Good question, but, and then he says it's the least of his concerns.
I think of all of our concerns, that's not one of the ones that's high on my list, because although this one mutates a little bit like flu, it doesn't seem to do it in a very fast or meaningful way. My suspicion is that any wave that comes along next year or the year after will be rather similar to this year's wave, and the vaccine will still be relevant. The thing we've got to have an eye on, obviously, is how durable our vaccine immunity is, and whether a vaccine that's given this year lasts for 6 months or 12 months or you know, for a lifetime. And that, you know, the devil will be in the detail. And we don't know that yet for the different candidates around. Mm.
Yes, Danny Altman there from Imperial College in London. Yeah, don't be asking any questions about the vaccine being useless in this coming winter because of the possibility that the virus itself might mutate. Don't ask questions like that. We're not thinking about that. We're just thinking about getting the vaccine out and getting the vaccine out as quick as possible. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show live from Salford on Thursday, July 15th, 2020. My old voice is not the best today, not the Mae West, but you'll stay with me. You'll forgive me. Piers Corbyn joins me a little bit later on. Tony Gosling before that. Music now, mysteriously, from Peter Andre. Why not, eh? And do tweet the programme. I do love reading your tweets. Peter Andre on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Mysterious Girl. Let me just clarify what I said earlier on. It's very important. So the news today that the Weather Attribution Initiative has said that Arctic temperatures and the very warm weather in Siberia is proof that man-made climate change is real and is devastating. Now, the World Weather Attribution Initiative, saying climate change by man is real, its main partner is Oxford University's Environmental Change Institute. That place itself, that institute, is run by a woman called Dr. Monica Zurek. Dr. Monica Zurek. I couldn't remember her name, and I lost the note that I made. It's very important. And this woman used to work for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in agriculture, in distributing funds to improve the sustainability of agriculture systems and risk management. And that is a very significant, not a significant find by this particular journalist. I mean, it's easy to find this stuff out. It's very easy. But the media should be doing this stuff, shouldn't it? Researchers and producers for the nation's most listened to television and radio news programmes should be doing this stuff and asking the question. Why is Gates all over climate? Why is Gates all over depopulation? Why is Gates all over vaccines? Why is Gates all over implantable technology and health passports and stuff like that? Wasn't this guy a computer geek who wrote software and made his billions? What's he doing promoting vaccine research in third world countries, injuring 500,000 people in India, demanding that, you know, we take population control seriously? But nobody's asking these questions. And it's very, very simple. The most inexperienced of researchers can find this stuff out very, very easily. You know, at the moment, Google isn't even deleting this stuff. It's there. I don't use Google as a search engine ordinarily, but I do check from time to time to see if you can still find certain things on Google. And you can still find this stuff out about Gates. Right, so this is your Richie Allen Show. Let's hit up Tony Gosling then. Broadcast journalist, of course, of renown. Terrific writer. And I have to say, everything I came to know about Bilderberg came from using Tony's website, bilderberg.org, and watching his many presentations over the years. I think he's there, but he's a little bit late getting to the microphone, so we'll give him a minute. He might give me a ring in a second now. I'll read a few tweets. In the meantime, keep those tweets coming in. Acker says, I hope Piers Corbyn's case is minor irritation. I don't understand any of that. You'll have to rewrite that for me, I'm afraid. Hi to Natalie. Natalie Stacey. These days of triggerwarning.tv. Hi to Diane, who says, Richie, Gates says the devil is in the details. So we find Bill Gates again. Why am I not surprised? That's right, it's Gates. It's extraordinary. Extraordinary. Put a post out today. There was a story in the Daily Mail. I do read all the UK's daily newspapers, broadsheet and tabloid. I do. Takes me a while, but I do it every day. And the Daily Mail ran a story today, which is a very significant one. And again, it's about how people in care homes were disadvantaged by the government's decision to send people from hospitals into care homes without testing them for any virus in order to make room in hospitals. In order to make room in hospitals. Now, more than half, not more than, but nearly half of those who have died in this country of coronavirus, 20,000 of 45,000 died in care homes. The vast majority of the ones who died outside care homes are over 65. It's a story that the Mail picked up today and the Telegraph picked up today, and I think the Independent picked up today as well. I've given him his introduction already. Let's welcome back to the programme our great friend and colleague, the one and only Tony Gosling, who sprained his ankle recently. How's your ankle, my friend?
Oh, well, I've just manoeuvred myself to stick it on top of a big box and a cushion. So, yeah, it's keeping it upright. Anyway, so, yeah, survived it. I don't think there's anything broken.
It's what were you doing, playing five-a-side? You shouldn't be playing five-a-side at your age, Gosling.
Well, I know, you're right. Kickboxing. So this is a big black line right the way, almost like a kind of watermark halfway up my foot on both sides now. So the bruise is coming out, and hopefully in a few days it should be almost back to normal.
Keep it elevated. Lots to get through. We will, of course, talk Bristol statues and Ghislaine Maxwell, but it would be remiss of me not to ask you for your thoughts on emerging stories this afternoon. The Russian state or elements of the Russian state being blamed for supplying the Labour Party with that document about the US-UK trade talks last year, but also being accused by Canada, the UK and the US of trying to steal COVID vaccine research material. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think there must be somewhere at the BBC or MI5 somebody sitting there constantly looking to try and make up stories about how terrible Russia is. I mean, there really is an attempt to demonize Russia, because Russia is a confident, independent nation that tells things as it is and acts in the Middle East, to protect its own interests. Quite an independent. I'm a big fan of Putin, actually. I've got no bones about saying that. A lot of people are scared to. In fact, I was chatting to someone the other day, a quite wealthy, well-connected person, that says, I'm just frightened to mention how much I support Putin, because his voice is constantly puncturing the nonsense that we're getting from the Western media. And I honestly think that in the West, our media is becoming more and more like what used to be called CCTV, the Chinese state media, all the time. It's becoming boring. For example, last night on Channel 4 News, we had a whole long section about this statue that's been put up instead of Edward Colston's in Bristol, which was just boring. It was egotistical. The artist involved, I think, is a complete nobody. He just copies Damien Hirst, and, you know, there's an attempt here just to get, it's a publicity stunt. And Channel 4 News carry a, you know, 5-10 minute piece all about it, as if they didn't realize it's a publicity stunt. So we're becoming rather dull, like China. And so that's why we're getting so much Russia, anti-Russia stuff.
Well, hang on a second now. A broken clock is right twice a day. If you're Vladimir Putin or his agents, you look last year, you think, who's the best bet for me? Maybe Jeremy Corbyn is my best bet. Maybe if Jeremy Corbyn leads the next government, there'll be a reversal of the UK's serious strategy. It makes perfect sense to me, and I wouldn't hold it against Putin either, if they were making research materials available, or even documents pertaining to the UK-US trade and the possibility that the NHS might be at risk. Why wouldn't Putin do it? Why can't we countenance that fact? Surely, as I said, a broken clock is right twice a day, Tony.
Yeah, look, it's quite feasible. In fact, it might even be possible that Russian media did a bit of an investigation into this and published it themselves, but the British media didn't pick up on it. Look, the only people who've been trying to undermine Corbyn is not, or even in this case, big up Corbyn, it's the British themselves. There's been a massive infiltration of the Labour Party last year, as we now know, where there was a whole bunch of people working full-time apparatchiks for Labour who were actively working to stop Corbyn being elected. Now, that, to me, is the problem. We are allowing our own democracy to be undermined. And the idea that, somebody has got some stories from Russia, you know, the Russian intelligence is blamed for any information that comes out that the Western oligarchy don't like. And it's every single time this happens, they point the finger at Russia. By the way, you know, the whole Skripal thing, my latest take on that is that there was an independent article about a week after it all happened, which I think is one of the most important articles of the lot, which it explains that Skripal wanted to go back to Russia. And so he, by the way, was intimately knew this Christopher Steele guy, ex-MI6, and was involved apparently in the preparation of the Steele dossier, which was used in order to smear Donald Trump. Now, if Skripal had been allowed to go back to Russia and been on RT, you know, strolled into their Moscow TV studio and started talking about how MI6 had fabricated all this evidence against Donald Trump in order to try and fix the US elections, MI6 would have ended up with a bit of egg on their face. So I think this is the reason why we had the whole Skripal incident. I mean, that's at least my latest educated guesswork. Is in order to protect MI6's backside. And imagine if Skripal had been on the telly talking about all this sort of thing, it would have been an absolute sensation. The Brits would have ended up with egg all over their face. So I think it's MI6 did on earth are we going to do in order to pin Skripal down and keep him here in the UK? So that's my take on it. So there's all sorts of attempts to smear Russia. I mean, it's not the first time. Hitler tried to do it. He tried to invade. He tried to destroy Moscow and Russia. Napoleon has tried it over the years. And this is really just a basic hatred of the old-fashioned way of doing things, the honest old-fashioned Christian way, which is the Orthodox Church. The Catholics didn't like it, the Protestants didn't like it, and they're just gunning for Moscow because it's an actual bastion of the Orthodox Church and honesty. So that's my take on all of this.
Yeah, it's very plausible, Tony. It is very plausible. I also think that there is a danger when we like the Russian government's approach to foreign policy, when we appreciate the Russian government's support of Syria, which is vital, there's also a danger that we do forget that you said you like Putin. I know enough about Vladimir Putin from my time in media to know that Putin is a gangster. I could spend...
They all are.
Of course, and I could spend an hour here talking about the Sochi Olympics and money going missing in the billions, well, in the tens of millions, let me say that. Look, all of these states are doing things in their own interests, and it's a bit silly for anybody, I think, and I'm not suggesting you're silly, but it's a bit short-sighted for anybody to imagine that any one state is completely pure in its intentions and in its
actions.
No,
they're definitely not pure, right?
No, right, they're not.
Let's look at how Putin came to power. In the early 1990s, he was going on skiing holidays with Boris Berezovsky, who was the number one top oligarch. And who knows what was happening in those little chalets. I won't say any more than that. But anyway, he got very, very closely into, he was working for the KGB, of course, and he was very closely into Berezovsky's confidence. Then Berezovsky was the most powerful because, number one reason is because he started NTV, which was the first Russian independent television channel, and they were dishing the dirt on Yeltsin and all sorts of people during the 1990s. When it came to 2000, the Yeltsin, you know, basically the whole thing had fallen apart. Most of Russia, I mean, I'm talking about credibility of the Russian government, and most of Russia had then been bought up for pennies by, you know, the nationalized industries had all been sold for pennies by these oligarchs. And it was time for Berezovsky thought, I want somebody a bit more credible who's going to be my little poodle in charge. The only trouble was when Putin did turn up in the Kremlin, he immediately turned the tables on Berezovsky and asked the chief prosecutor, have you got anything on this guy? You know, and it turned out, of course, they did. They had loads of charges against Berezovsky that Yeltsin had quashed. And so the most powerful and important case was one of the privatization of Aeroflot, the corruption involved in that, and loads of dodgy money coming from Switzerland to do that. And so he said, okay, let's get that case going. And then a few months later, old Berezovsky gets a call from Putin saying, look, I'm really sorry, but the police, I couldn't stop them. They're coming in the morning, you know, and you better get out of the country tonight. And so, of course, Berezovsky then flew to London, and that was the end of the chief oligarch. And Putin made sure that the other oligarchs were only going to stay in Russia if they agreed not to try and take over the Kremlin or interfere with national politics. So he is, of course, a gangster like the other oligarchs are, but he's very definitely number one in Russia.
Yeah, and Russia isn't a threat to peace and stability on the international stage, and that's all that really matters to me. Putin is a problem for the Russian people. I can believe that people inside Russia would have preferred Corbyn, believing that Corbyn's approach to Syria would be different. I can understand that. What I can't believe is the add-on story today that Russia has been hacking into the UK, US and Canadian and other countries' research into the COVID vaccine. Or if I'm told that I must believe that, well, I'm also going to believe then that every single country in the world is doing it. I think that's a pathetic story this afternoon. And
it
I don't think we need to spend too much time.
We need to have evidence with these
evidence,
stories. You can't just take this on trust from the BBC. Are you having a laugh?
Yeah. Well, it's worse than that. It's a case of occasionally a reporter will ask an intelligence expert for, you know, at least some evidence. And the stock answer, of course, is it will compromise an ongoing investigation or an ongoing mission. And that's nonsense, and they take it as given. We won't stay with that. We will talk about masks, but I want to talk about this Bristol statue. Just, I know you touched on it a second ago, this artist who's been called a narcissist, and this woman, Jen Reed, this woman who stood on the empty plinth when the Colson statue was thrown away. They're talking black power and stuff. What do you make of some of our mutual acquaintances, people we would have rubbed up against over the years, you and me, are very concerned about the Black Lives Matter. Not what it began as, the grassroots movement it did begin that was genuinely concerned about black people being disproportionately targeted by the police, not just in America but elsewhere, but that it's growing into something different, Tony, with enormous funding coming in now for some of the biggest companies in the world. Should we be concerned about that?
Well, of course we should. Look, Black Lives Matter, as far as I can see, and of course I've got no real inside information, you just need to look at the circumstantial evidence and the financial evidence. is it looks to me as if this is an attempt to have a kind of colour revolution style movement that can be fairly easily manipulated in Britain. But look, one thing I found out about the funding of it, I mean, most people realise that there's a lot of Soros money has gone into this over the years. But there's this thing called the Democracy Alliance in the US, which is headed up by a woman called Leah Hunt Hendricks, a white girl. And she is very pro Black Lives Matter. She's been making sure that a lot of Democracy Alliance money goes to them. And the interesting thing about her is that her granddad was one of the main funders of the Ku Klux Klan, a guy called H.R. Hunt. And he was also one of the people involved in the Kennedy assassination the night before. They all went round to one of the houses. I think it was Clint Murchison's house. And this is all evidence from Lyndon Johnson's girlfriend. And these whole lot got together to finalise the plans to kill Kennedy and to sign it all off and to give it the go-ahead. And so her grandfather, of the woman who is now funding Black Lives Matter through Democracy Alliance, this Leah Hunt Hendricks, was involved in funding the Ku Klux Klan and chopping off the head of President Kennedy. Oh, and by the way, funding the Nation of Islam too. So these people's game is pretty clear to me, Richie, which is they fund both sides of the chessboard. They want civil society movements on both sides. And, you know, I have no real problems with the actual ordinary grassroots people in Black Lives Matter. But what bothers me is that the people that dish out the funding often get a great deal of, well, they get to choose who runs the organisation at the higher level. And this particular statue in Bristol of Jen, well, I've got not real problem with that, but you just look at the guy that's the artist behind it. I mean, unbelievable, this bloke, Mark Quinn. He's a satanic artist, I would say. He's obsessed with blood. You know, what is this? He's the only artist to really go to town on. Every few months, he's been taking blood out of his body and then collecting it all up and then freezing it and then making images of himself using this 10 pints of his own blood to make a kind of head of himself mixed with plaster of Paris and blood. Every 5 years he does it. Once isn't good enough for this guy. He's also obsessed, by the way, with making artistic images, if you can call them artistic. I would say they're monstrosities that should just be smashed up and destroyed and thrown in the garbage heap of deformed people. So people who've been genetically mutated and deformed in the womb, people who've had hideous accidents, and people who've been smashed up or deformed due to war or illness. So this is Mark Quinn for you. And this is the guy they have all over Channel 4 News giving him a whole load of free publicity. What a great guy he is. So his net worth will have gone up. And it's just a publicity stunt, like I said before. But what a horrible guy. You know, I don't think that this is art at all. Art should be about crystallizing something beautiful in permanent form. Now, that obviously isn't the slave trader, right? Of course it's
right,
not.
Yeah,
but, you know, let's not have people making artistic copies of themselves using their own blood, having dripped it out of their body for 5 years or something, and then trying to make out that that's great art. No, it's just ego.
So you would censor Quinn then? I mean, I don't like it either.
Yeah, look, if I was a curator, I would throw him in the dustbin, basically.
Not I don't him, like it either
stuff.
Now.
I wouldn't even put it in front of the public. I think it's really nasty, negative stuff. If you go past that, you say on your way to the shops, it would turn your stomach. It wouldn't give you any kind of artistic benefit. It's not filling you with the joy of life. It's doing the total opposite. It's actually a psychological attack on everyone that goes past it.
You know, listen, I had to read that stuff twice to realise it was true, in case my listeners are wondering why I'm not challenging you on your characterization of the man's work. What Tony has said is true, and I've seen some of these images online, and I find them pretty awful too. But I mean, if one person likes it, well, it's art, isn't it? I suppose. But look, I hear you loud and clear. But the information you just gave me about E. Howard Hunt's granddaughter, I didn't know that, so that's new information for me. I mean, she's got to have some intelligence background then. That's absolutely gobsmacking stuff, that, you know, if she's heading up these organisations in America.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen, I mean, starting, I think, probably in former Yugoslavia, but been rolling out in places like Ukraine, attempts to do it in Syria and failing in Libya, places like this, and Tunisia, is these colour revolutions, the Oppor is one of the organisations involved in doing these, and they basically have similar kinds of campaigns in different countries in order to create massive civil society movements that are out on the streets. Well, in Ukraine, that led to the murdering of a whole load of police and demonstrators by snipers employed by NATO countries, NATO intelligence services.
Yeah.
And it's actually, I believe it's the Georgian snipers that went and confessed to being involved in it. There is quite a bit out there now about who was actually shooting people in Ukraine. So the idea is you create this massive sort of street demonstration movement, then you kill a whole bunch of police and demonstrators, and then you got a coup. You know, so there's an enormous panic in the government. What the hell are we going to do about this? And that's when the troops move in and say, oh, okay, it's time to take over now. You've lost control of the country. So
yeah,
that's the way OTPOR effectively operates. And that seems to me as if in the US and Britain, that that's an attempt, there's an attempt to get something like that started here. But of course, this is all part of the US presidential election campaign, isn't it? I mean, this is all just in the run-up to the end of this year. Is it November, where we have Donald Trump standing for re-election?
And we're in July. Will there be an election? I've asked some of my American guests recently to speculate, because of everything that's happened, because of the virus, which we'll talk about in a moment, and the shutdown globally, Trump, of course, having to deal with that like every other leader of every other country. It occurred to some of my listeners, some of my more learned listeners, that this might be the first, I don't know if it would be the first one to be suspended or delayed in US history. I'd have to look that up, but I think it very well might be if that was the case. Do you still expect it to go ahead?
Yeah, I do. I can't imagine it not. I mean, I'd be very surprised if it isn't. I think, you know, the fact that Biden has been manoeuvred into the position of standing against Trump, you know, the Tweedledum, Tweedledee situation, yeah. You know, I don't think they'll cancel their election, because that could cause all sorts of unrest and trouble in the US. Obviously, that may be part of the game, but it's really difficult to know. I don't think they'll cancel the elections. I mean, they've cancelled the elections here, of course, in the UK, although in many other parts of the world, they're going strong, you know, and in France, for example, they've carried on. Many, many places have just carried on. And we've got, by the way, you know, this is the other backdrop to this whole thing about the statue in Bristol, is we've got Labour Mayor Marvin Rees, who's mixed race from a West Indian father, who's just got a free year. I mean, basically, he's a dictator for a year. He was supposed to be re-elected in May. Every possibility was going to be booted out because he's been so appalling as a mayor. I mean, I'm slightly biased saying that, you know, having run the politics show in Bristol on the radio every week since he's been mayor. But all the stuff has come back about him basically has been negative. He's effectively a kind of a tool puppet of the establishment. He's been doing exactly what they want. His latest stream of stuff is basically selling off important bits of public land, which could be used for either infrastructure or cultural or shared facilities that the public is open to the public, flogging this land off in secret to speculators. And first thing anyone in Bristol finds out about it, that piece of land is gone. They've got planning permission on it now, have they? And that's the first anyone knows about this land being sold off. So it's not going out for tender in any public way. It's just being sold off down the pub by Marvin Rees to his mates.
Marvin Rees, of course, the first we ever heard of him, of course, Tony, was listening to your programme, but also for many of our listeners because of the statue thing. Local authorities have been demanding, through people like the Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, they've been demanding, I've been covering this the last few days, it's a bit sinister this, they want people's data, they want their medical data to better effectively trace people to avoid more localised lockdowns. And in the House of Commons the other day, Matt Hancock effectively told Jonathan Ashworth that local councils are getting that data, they are getting personal identifiable data to help them follow people that have maybe tested positive and been told to stay at home so that they can follow up on those people. This really is 1984 now, and I don't say that for effect, I don't say it to be dramatic, but I think it's gotten as bad as it's going to get, and then day by day something else happens that isn't challenged, that isn't opposed by any politician really in the country of any note. And I think, where are we going to be next year? Well, we know, of course, that masks will be introduced in shops in the UK, in England, I should say, by next week, by next Friday, tomorrow week. And I fear personally, none of that is going to change until they mass produce a vaccine. And I really believe when that happens, that those of us who don't partake in the vaccine will be told that we will be subject to our own personal lockdown of sorts. In other words, well, that's okay, Mr. Adam, but you'll kind of have to hang around your home or as near to it as best you can. Am I letting my imagination run away with myself, or am I on the right track? What do you think?
Well, I think you are. You're losing it there. No, actually, of course not. Look, this is definitely a part of, I think, a much more sinister and bigger and deeper plan that's been hanging around for many, many years. I would suggest the most important person to look at with regard to understanding how the elite, the new world, the deep state, whatever you want to call them, the Gates and his friends and his backers, the oligarchy, have been preparing for a pandemic to shock the world, has been looking at the way that Andrew Wakefield's been treated over the years. I mean, I spent at least 3 years literally puzzling, scratching my head. Why is it? Is it just about the money that Andrew Wakefield is being attacked? He's one of the best people or speakers on vaccines, and he's extremely good. He's not one of these people that says, oh, all vaccines are bad. He will say, well, this vaccine is good. It works. And so let's keep it because it's passed the safety tests. It's been tested properly and it works. But don't then start injecting it into young kids when it hasn't been tested on young kids. Don't multiple inject it with five other vaccines into a newborn child. What do you think you're doing? And he's making absolutely clear that this is simply not acceptable. This is effectively using young infants who've got no kind of mental capability to make a decision to take these vaccines, multiple vaccines, as guinea pigs. This is Dr. Mengele's experimentation chamber in the concentration camp. This is really is literally what they're doing with young kids now with these vaccines, because the amount of people who are being harmed by them is enormous. And so many people, I mean, it's just anecdotally speaking to people who say, oh, yes, you know, well, I had this vaccine and actually I caught whatever it was, the flu, say. Even worse, many people have had serious permanent injuries due to various vaccines. I was looking recently at the swine flu vaccine in the 1970s in the US, which was injected into millions of Americans and it hadn't been tested at all. And then what happens as people start to get together to sue the vaccine manufacturers in the US in the late 70s and early 80s? So the American pharmaceutical industry gets together and gets a new law passed in the States. I think it was 1983 or 4. Which means they don't have to pay any compensation for any damages that are caused by vaccines that they have made and that they have recommended and injected into people. So the government has to take all the liability. So that means, of course, the government and the courts are deciding on whether people get any compensation if their loved ones die after having a vaccine. So, you know, the government very rarely finds, let me tell you, very rarely finds itself guilty. And so the pharmaceutical industry has got a free pass. It's completely controlled the regulation of its own products. And so we can't trust anything they do. Yes, if there are proper tests and if there's proper analysis, fine. But Wakefield's attack, the attack on Wakefield, Richie, over the years, to me, has crystallized exactly what was going on. They've been preparing for this vaccine pandemic ID 2020 for decades, and this is their big moment. Whether, you know, quite whether they decided to do it now because of the attempt to ramp up attacks on China and the war, potential war on China, or whether it's just in order to destabilize Brexit, I have absolutely no idea. But whatever it is, it's definitely a new world order, deep state, oligarchy's decision to do this. And they don't care whether we live or die. The idea that they want us to wear masks, well, that's just in order to coerce us, as I said before, into ultimately taking this vaccine when it comes down the line, as it definitely will.
Make life very difficult for people, and there might come a point when they might beg for the vaccine. I've got Piers Corbyn coming on the programme in about 15 minutes, the physicist and meteorologist. I don't need to tell you who he is, you know who he is. Let me ask you this question. Is it patently obvious now that even if these are not his ideas, is it patently obvious that Bill Gates is the driving force or the front man behind these agendas. Let me very quickly explain why I'm asking you that. Everybody is running a story today to say that rising temperatures in Siberia and the Arctic are proof that man-made climate change is real. The study is done by the World Weather Attribution Initiative. That organisation, I cannot determine whether or not it gets funding from Gates, but I suspect it does. However, its only major partner is the Oxford University Environmental Change Institute. The woman who heads that up, Monica Zurek, used to work for Gates in terms of agriculture, in managing money to be sent for sustainable agricultural products around the world. So there's a direct link between this and Gates. You look at Gates then, vaccines, depopulation. Gates was in the news yesterday talking about depopulation, the necessity to reduce population growth in coming years. Obviously implantables, Gates is all over that as well. Gates is everywhere. So is Gates basically the captain or the rear admiral of this agenda? If it's a ship, if we see the agenda as a big boat, it's not his idea. There might be people above him, but he seems to be in charge on the ground, right?
Well, no, I don't think he's in charge. He's the front man. He's the guy who's going to be the public face of all of this. He comes across as very affable. Hey, everyone, I want to be everyone's friend. You know, the fact of the matter is he's not, is he? He's the one who's got the back doors for the National Security Agency and IBM and everybody else into all of our Windows machines. And that's how he's made his money, just by sneaking into our lives, by stealing our data, by mining our lives and selling them on. That's Mr. Gates for you. And yes, okay, his Windows system is pretty good. You know, but it comes at a price. Bill Gates' price. The people behind him, I would suggest, are more like your Bilderberger characters. So we're talking about the real oligarchy. That is to say, the people with the power and the wealth, mostly the bankers. There's a whole smattering of aristocracy in there, European aristocracy. There's your characters like Henry Kissinger, who, by the way, has a very, very close ties with China as well as the United States. And people like Kissinger need to be examined much more closely, especially when they start threatening that if you don't get this COVID right, there might be a world war. Well, I mean, is that a threat? Or it's couched in terms of language that makes you think it's a warning. But is it actually a threat? Is he saying, look, you better do as we say, otherwise there's going to be a world war, folks? But anyhow, I mean, this is part of definitely the ID 2020 is very, very simple. Have a good old look at that and you'll see exactly what's going on. The idea is to have an identification card that you carry around, a bit like a credit card with an RFID chip in it that blips as you go in and out of a door. And you can only come in if you've got this, which will show that you have been vaccinated or not. Now, what's going to happen? So what will happen is people who've been vaccinated and don't want to will borrow cards or get fraudulently new cards made for people who have had the vaccination. So they will then be able to go around. But then they'll say, oh, gosh, you can't do this. We need to embed these chips in people's bodies because people have been fraudulently walking in, you know, even though they haven't had the vaccine. In which case we start moving into very sinister revelation territory. This is the mark of the beast.
Book of Revelation.
This is the idea that you cannot buy or sell unless you've got this thing in your forehead or in your hand. And I mean, that immediately smacks of sensible stuff from 2000 or so years ago to me, because you've got two classes, haven't you? You've got the head types. These are the people in charge. And then you've got the hand types. These are the kind of worker bees. And that's, I think, the way they're treating us, Richie, really, is like a bunch of idiots fed nonsense and lies through the mass media. And we are basically there to be herded around and mind controlled, told what to think. And then we start getting, if you start getting into the Book of Revelation itself, you'll see there are several very distinct sections, and it takes you right the way through a period of years with the arrival of characters like the Antichrist, etc., who will make an attempt to rule the world, a one world order. But ultimately, the good news is they fail. They just can't get it together. They can't convince the world that they're the nice guys. However many people they kill, they just can't do it. And I don't know quite how it's all going to play out, but it's all there. You know, the seven seals, the seven vials, the seven bowls. And, you know, I actually have done a timeline of Revelation. I did it years ago. It must be 15 years ago. I just sat and looked at
And there are lots of little things in there that make you think. Like, for example, it talks about wormwood. Now, wormwood is the Ukrainian for wormwood is Chernobyl. So this suggests that maybe there's a little bit of information in there saying that part of the world is going to be covered with nuclear fallout or some sort of nuclear pollution. And you wouldn't believe that John, the Apostle John, could write that on Patmos, you know, nearly 2,000 years ago. But he did.
Yeah, the more I hear, you've said that to me, Darren. People have been in touch with me in the last couple of weeks talking about that very thing, the chip and the vaccine and, you know, it being foretold and the coincidences and the similarities. Yeah, I'm not optimistic. We'll finish up on this. I'll give you the final word. I think whatever the agenda, whatever the forces are behind it, I think they've been extraordinarily successful in recent years in distancing people from one another through the many things we've talked about over the years, identity politics, of course, race wars, cultural wars, to the point where even in traditional working class communities where people would have been throughout history would have known the names of their neighbours and would have interacted on a daily basis with their neighbours. I see it now even in Salford. People just don't give a shit, Tony. And that's what makes it all the easier for them to succeed with this. I see this succeeding. I don't believe time is linear anyway. I think we've been through this a million times and maybe we'll go through it a million times again. We're not going to win this. Whatever they want to do, they're going to do it. Because I just see people effectively begging for it. And I see other people just resign to it.
Well, look, I'm going to shine a little bit of light in on this conversation.
Go on, son.
I totally disagree with you. Look, the what I've seen, for example, we had a demonstration on Sunday in Thornbury, just north of Bristol, which was attended by 100 or so people, even though there was no publicity for it at all. The press never attend. Of course, they don't. It was an anti-lockdown protest, and there were a whole load of speakers there talking about everything. It was organised by a young mum in a tower block, not by some sort of civil society organisation. You know, there are people all over the place who are absolutely onto this. You know, people I chat to down the street or where we, you know, they will. The other thing is that a lot of people are not prepared to talk about it with strangers. If it's somebody that they know, they trust, they will. I was chatting to someone I'd known for a few years the other day who was saying that he works for KPMG. And he's extremely worried about all this because he knows that he's going to have this vaccine. But he's looking at ways of making it so that he can not have the vaccine and yet have some sort of certificate to say he has had the vaccine. And he's also having to be he's having to say the complete opposite at work about what he really believes so that he isn't flagged up as somebody who's going to be an anti-vaxxer. So, you know, it's a very, very complicated issue and lots of people are not, and particularly in the Brits are quite good at this, actually. They're not telling you to your face what they really think about it all. So there's definitely an awareness raising going on, particularly, I'd say, in places like council estates. We found exactly the same with 9/11, by the way, that loads of people living on council estates have seen all this stuff. You know, they've seen this. I would imagine many of them have seen this head of the snake thing, for example, about Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, there are various other things that, everything to do with this pandemic, they're seeing lots of their people losing their jobs. They're saying, oh, this is just the Tories up to their usual tricks. So I think, and also if you look at what the Bible says about this, okay, now I realise a lot of your listeners won't think that this is, you know, a good template for what's going to happen and what's happening. But, you know, it's all contested, Richie, right the way down the way. It's definitely not a walkover. You get the Antichrist and the false prophet on one side, on the devil's side, trying to enslave humanity. And then you get the two witnesses on God's side who are constantly out there saying, no, they're talking rubbish, they're talking nonsense and arguing the other case. So, you know, this is the way the Bible talks about it. And it also makes it very clear that there will be a big military contest here. So it's not just about, you know, a discussion in the media. You know, the revolution will not be televised. It's also, a very big battle out there in the world. And ultimately, they lose. Be sure they cannot crush the human spirit. They do everything they possibly can to do it, but my God, they end up landing flat on their face.
I'm not going to answer that, T. I think my audience needed to hear that. They have enough of my miserable was it pessimistic predictions. Thanks for coming back on today.
Thisweek.org.uk. What I will do, Richie, sorry, before we finish, I'll just tweet after the show. I'll tweet a link to my revelation timeline.
Tony, you took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say that. You did that before we met. We met in during my days in Spain back around 2009. So I think you put that together before that too. And hey, let's make time to discuss that particular subject on its own because there's so much in it. And I know
the sun gets unbearably hot. Revelation 16:8. The earth turns completely dark. 16:10. So that's the bit that I think you've been dwelling too much upon.
Yeah, maybe. Listen, mate, bilderberg.org, thisweek.org.uk. Follow Tony on Twitter. There's only one Tony Gosling on Twitter. So if you look for Tony Gosling, you'll find him. Follow him there. He tweets daily. He's always got interesting things to say. Thanks for your time, my friend. Love having you on.
God bless you, Richie. Cheers.
You too. And mind the ankle. Cheers, T. A bit of a sprained ankle, Tony Gosling, he's dealing with there, and came on to talk to us despite that. 6.5 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show for Thursday, July 15th. Is it or is it the 16th? 16th. I'm fucking useless. I've had a useless week. Oh, Christ. I've made more mistakes this week on air and than I have done in 20 years of broadcasting. I've had the week of all weeks. And I can't wait to see the end of it. And I was supposed to be in Cheetham Hill with Hayden Hewitt this afternoon to do some stuff for the website, to film some stuff and to take some photographs for the website and stuff because it's being overhauled and it will be really relaunched very soon. And obviously I didn't do that because I'm here with you, which is not a bad thing. But at the same time, I can't wait to see the back of this week. We've all had these weeks. Every time I fire a jingle, it doesn't fucking play. Every time I go to look at some notes I've made, the notes are not there. Why are you feeling sorry for yourself, Alan? Well, just because I am. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. This is the Beach Boys. You fucking see? Oh, there you are. Right. Oh, my God. This is Kokomo from the Beach Boys. I'll be joined by Piers Corbin, who will be live from London in a few minutes' time. And we'll have plenty to talk about with him as well. Yeah, it's not exactly the sort of music for this weather, because it's pretty grim again in Salford, in the northwest of the country. It's warm, it is a bit humid, a bit muggy, but it's pretty grim out there. It's been a rotten July thus far, hasn't it? Not sort of weather for that sort of music anyway. No sign of Piers Corbin just yet. That is in keeping with the week I'm having. I'm channeling my inner Eugene Levy now. What a week I'm having. But I'm sure Piers will be there shortly. Tony Gosling has tweeted that link, which is on bilderberg.org. I've just retweeted it. The link to the research he did into the Book of Revelation and how basic passages of the Book of Revelation can be related to events happening on Earth today and yesteryear. Yeah, very interesting field of research. I did have a man on some years ago, maybe not on this program, but maybe on the program I did in Spain. There was an interesting man whose name I don't remember, but if I dug out my old diaries, I would find him. And he was very interested in Bible codes. And I had quite a bit of interest in listening to him. I was very interested in listening to him. Even though I wouldn't have read too much of the Bible over the years, apart from the Bible that I would have been, I suppose, exposed to in primary school in Ireland, and even in secondary school, because in secondary school, or high school, as some of you will call it, we did have a religious education class. No separation of church and state, or at least no separation of church and education in God's country, in Ireland. Kelly is listening in Cork. How you doing, Kelly? Lovely in Cork, says Kelly. Yeah. Yeah, we had this run of very warm days. I suppose we've had it now. I'm going to try Piers again. I'll try him while I'm talking to you. And failing that, well, you know, I'll just have to take a tune, I think. Have to take a tune. Running on Empty, maybe, by Jackson Brown. There's a tune now and a half. Piers Corbin, you don't need to be told too much about Piers. Physicist, meteorologist, very, very qualified scientist and all-round good guy. And I suppose He's best known for being the brother of the former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. I'm ringing him. He's supposed to be there, but he's not there, or is he? No, he's not. Ah, God bless you, Pierce. He's not there. Ah, well. Well, well, well. Well, well, well. Chris says it's beach boy weather in Hampshire. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, it's only Northern Ireland in the northwest of the UK that's got this dull weather. Hi to the left hand of God, who says to me on Twitter, I'm beginning to think if the plan is to cull the population by killing all the brainwashed, brain-dead plebs, by getting them to have the vaccine, feck it, bring it on, he says. I am a bit of a pessimist, aren't I, really? Really. My mood goes with my general... How do I put this? My moods change depending on how energetic I am or how fatigué, as the French would say, how fatigued, how tired I am. And I've had a mad week with lots of things going on outside the show, and yet I've still managed to put on the show. I'm running a bit on empty. I'm not looking for your sympathy here. And when you learn about producing radio and broadcasting radio, one of the things they tell you very early on is don't ever complain to your audience about being tired. It'll kill the mood of your radio show, and your audience doesn't want to hear it. But we've got a different type of relationship, you and me. We can tell each other the bloody truth, and I'm knackered today. And things going wrong, well, they don't help, do they? So it's 6:15. I'll tell you what I'll do. I've not even got a tune lined up. Yeah, yeah. That's how badly prepared I am today. I'll quickly line up a tune and we'll give Piers Corbyn a chance to get himself together and come on to talk about climate change and the claims today that very warm temperatures in Siberia and warmer temperatures in the Arctic Circle, they're just proof that man-made anthropogenic climate change is a real thing. Real thing. Kelly's been on to tell me about the March for Innocence in Dublin, which I retweeted last week, which got a lot of attention. It got a lot of attention in the Irish media and in the media overseas as well. You might come on and talk to me about it, Kelly, if you fancy it. Very, very important subject, that. Talked last week about minor attracted persons. Got to be careful. Got to be careful sounds like self-censor. I'll never self-censor as long as I live. But you got to be careful when you talk about these things that you don't in any way incite violence. Because violence is wrong. Somebody said to me a few weeks ago, I met somebody whose name, hang on, it'll come. Martina, that's right, Martina. How are you, Martina? Martina lives in Earlham on the Height in Salford. And listens to the programme and ran up to me rather excitedly about 3 weeks ago in a nearby park. And we had a chat about the show and the radio and all that. And she said to me, sometimes you go into a rant. And then she said to me, you always say to people, don't be violent. But you don't mean that, do you? She said with a gleam in her eye. But of course, I do mean that. I genuinely do. I don't sit around in robes and beads with candles singing Kumbaya, you know. I can defend myself if needs be, but violence is not the answer. I believe whatever is controlling this agenda, I believe one of the things that it desires, one of the things that it craves is for us to become violent. Really. Violence is not the answer. Violence begets violence. They will suck it up like that asteroid in that film with Bruce Willis. If you fire 1,000,000 nukes at the thing, it will eat those nuclear weapons, swallow them, and keep coming at you. That's what the establishment wants. So when I say, don't be violent with people, don't threaten people, don't see your MP across the road and think, oh, he's part of this Orwellian agenda, I'll just punch him in the face. No, don't do that. You're wrong. You're as bad as him or her. Don't do that ever. It's wrong. There are ways of dealing with these people and these things and fighting them. physically is not the, the thing. And I know there are people who believe that I'm wrong, and they say things like, oh, well, he's a shill, really, trying to keep people peaceful. I'm not trying to keep people peaceful or pacified. No! I want people to come together and say, well, we're not going to obey. I want people to come together and say, well, you see, this community here, this 300 houses, you see, this one here, we're not paying any more of your council taxes. We're not listening to any of your bullshit. We won't be wearing masks. We won't do this and we won't do that. I've always believed that's the way to go. Personally. Right. Okay. I might have played this recently, but I don't care. I'm in a hurry to get Piers Corbyn on the programme. So let's get him on then. Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Live from Salford. Right, let's get rid of the music then. The time is 20 minutes past 6 on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's good to be back with you. That was short and sweet. Thankfully, I think the aforementioned, the gentleman, the scholar that is Piers Corbyn, the physicist and meteorologist himself, I think might very well be on the line now. What kept you, Piers? How are you?
Oh, I was on a bus.
Good man. I hope you weren't wearing a mask, were you?
Slowed down by a COVID fake virus.
The COVID fake virus. Tell me about the masks and stuff. I mean, you like myself, I like a bit of public transport. I've not been on a bus in the last few weeks, so I've not been observing. On the bus that you took to the office, are people wearing these masks?
There were quite a lot of people wearing masks. I didn't wear one. I just got on. Nobody said anything, and I just got off.
Good man. And what do you think will happen?
So I think they're not. Well, they know they can't implement it, but a lot of people are wearing them, saying, "Well, I'm just doing it because I have to." But of course, then they become a symbol of submission. So everyone else thinks, "Oh yes, everyone's wearing one. It must be real, this virus." But there's nothing happening now, other than any normal random infection, which is rare anyway in summer. So what we're doing is a complete hoax.
Park the COVID virus just for a minute, because obviously just before they began to talk about Russia today, and not Russia today, yeah, the TV, before they began to talk about Russia and election interference, the media was giving a lot of coverage to an organisation which has claimed that the soaring temperatures in the Arctic Circle and the soaring temperatures in Siberia are proof enough, because these are one time in 80,000 year events, these are proof enough that man-made climate change must be real. Now people are, I know you laugh at it, and I think you're the only man in the UK in science with any courage to take it on, to your credit, but people hear this stuff and they see people swimming in a pond in Siberia and they think, holy God, what's going on? Something must be going on. So remind our listeners, why are these groups wrong? Why is this not evidence of man-made climate change?
Well, there is something going on, namely a desperation by the globalist authorities to prove they've got some ideological support for the nonsense they're trying to impose on the world now, namely they've got to save the planet from climate change. So these scare stories always crop up conveniently, that they need a backup for their crackdowns now on rights, and of course they have those in the background on the form of man-made climate change, which requires population reduction, reduction in living standards, and so forth. So you see, this claim, once in an 80,000 years, is completely made up. The Met Office, nobody has data of 80,000 years, you know, in terms of seasonal detail.
It's not even ice cores.
Complete nonsense.
Because
it's complete nonsense. No, it wouldn't. They'd have annual stuff, but it wouldn't be. It couldn't be that. You see, ice cores do record snow, but it doesn't. You know what I mean? To conclude some extra snow in the Arctic or Antarctic means that it was hot in Russia is utter nonsense. It's utter, complete nonsense.
So what would you put down? These extremely warm temperatures in Siberia and in the Arctic Circle, and Sky News and the BBC and ITV News are running these images of ice breaking off and going into the sea. It's all very dramatic.
Of course, ice always breaks off in the summer and goes into the sea. This is what's been happening for millions of years. And bear in mind that in the summer, the Arctic is 24/7 sunshine. So, you know, the Russian for a short time, summer in Siberia is hot. It is hot, and same in Finland and so forth. So there's nothing unusual going on whatsoever. And these claims by the Russian Academy of Sciences is the same Russian Academy of Sciences which in the past said quite explicitly, man-made climate change does not exist. Carbon dioxide levels follow world temperatures. Now that is a scientific fact. So there's no way, since CO2 levels are following temperatures, that CO2 levels are also causing temperatures. It is complete nonsense, and it's part of the new role of academia to be part of the political spectacle. And the political spectacle is required now to make people believe in a new normal, and then a new world order where rights will be taken away, living standards reduced, people removed from the countryside, rammed into egg boxes in the cities, and we'll have 5G towers to control. And also, of course, the same radiation at certain frequencies makes you ill, as is proven by the data, where 5G and 5G installation and COVID and under official figures show a very high correlation.
You know, my other half, who doesn't often listen to this program, got her own mm-hmm. life, and maybe she's wise not to listen to programs like this. But she's also very open minded, Piers. And we were sitting in the living room on Tuesday night, and a guy called Thomas Moore from Sky News, who's their science editor, and he's a bit of an arse, unsurprisingly, he began talking about the coronavirus, and he was saying the most outlandish things, and he obviously didn't have any evidence to back the things up. He was saying that we now believe, he said, even though he's not a doctor or a virologist. He said, we now believe that coronavirus can have incredibly long-lasting effects in the human body. And he began to talk about chronic fatigue. He began to talk about migraines. Wait for this. He then began to talk about kidney damage and heart damage and liver damage. And my missus is very, very bright. She's also very quiet. She nudges me in the ribs, Piers, and she says to me, and she's not got a conspiracy theory bone in her body, she says, well, I wonder if these are the problems they expect 5G to cause people, and if they're getting their excuses in early. And I looked at her and I said, wow. Yeah. I said, I think you're onto something there. Isn't that amazing? So tell people that coronavirus is going to give you all these things, when in fact the things that you might be experiencing might be because you're exposed to 5G. And then she just went back to the crossword. And I just laughed.
Oh, okay. Good. But you see, the rate of death under official figures now under 5G is nonsense. It's just the same as any flu or cold. There's nothing special. And the media are lying. The National Health Service is lying. And we had a little rally in Lewisham on Saturday where we had a statement from an NHS, a senior doctor, actually, who said, and he had to be anonymous, but he said, we've been used, what you've been told isn't true. A lot of the figures are 10 times exaggerated, because every time they get a test and get it positive, they put it down as a positive test, but then they test people multiple times. So he said between 5 and 10 figures are exaggerated factors in some parts of the area he was talking about. And then he said that ambulances have been driving around empty with their sirens on, purely to give people the impression there is an emergency. So, you know, we do not have a National Health Service anymore. We have to reclaim the NHS. What we have is a top-down control and diktat operation, which is, I would say, a Nazified NHS. This is what our Nazi operations would work to control any outcomes they want. And, of course, the NHS is, you know, a top-down organisation, which is fine if the control is democratic and accountable. But right now, the democratic accountability is completely taken away. There's empty beds in there. Hospital workers hardly working at all, and the whole thing is part of a political spectacle to make people submit to another wave of corona, supposedly. Now, how can they predict this without having prepared it? Or they know they're going to turn on 5G in the autumn, then some people will get ill. So it's very important we take down these 5G towers so that they cannot do that.
one of the things that you said there about the empty hospitals.
Yes.
I know the media, the fourth estate, has fallen. We know that. We've talked about this for years. I mean, I first met you when I was doing a TV thing in London. I didn't interview you, but you did a lot of very good interviews with Mark Windows. And they were very revealing.
Yeah, that's true. And great stuff.
Great stuff on, and it's still, a lot of it is still on YouTube. It's very important. So even though the fourth estate is acting as a barrier to this information coming out, we do have social media. I agree with you, or at least I've seen evidence that the hospitals have not been really busy. I've seen that evidence. So why are nurses and doctors, whose jobs are on the line ultimately, why are they not coming forward to say, guys, listen, there's something very wrong here. We're not seeing these numbers. Where are these doctors and nurses?
Well, I know directly from some of them that that is the case, and they've told me off the record. But there are groups of doctors now in Surrey, for example, and in Leicester, who have explicitly stated that it's what we've been told is untrue. They've come out in writing, but not with names. We're hoping to get people to come forward with names. We're having numbers of little demonstrations in London, which are going to come together on August the 1st, Saturday, August the 1st, in Speaker's Corner, Hyde Park, 2 o'clock, where, you know, we want a lot of people to rally against the new normal and any more lockdowns and, of course, vax and tracks and 5G. Hopefully there we'll get some of these health workers to speak. I don't know, at least read something out from them. But, you know, at some point they're going to have to come out. They're scared of losing their jobs, of course.
Of course they are.
And I know some of them who, you know, had an off-the-record conversation with the doctor who was, well, he was very clear what's going on, and he's been victimised for various things, you know, just for speaking the truth. And he may or may not speak in public, but at this point, no.
I wanted to mention to you, I know we're jumping between different subjects, but going back briefly to climate change, the group responsible for the claims today is called the World Weather Attribution Initiative. And I was able to do, wait for this.
Okay.
It's madness.
Who are they? Yes.
Well, they're Bill Gates is who they are.
Oh, I see.
Right,
wait
for
this. Bill Gates operation.
Wait for this. Now, I can't prove that Gates gave them any money directly, but I think he might have. But I think I'll be able to find that out pretty quickly. But the World Weather Attribution Initiative is partnered with Oxford University's Environmental Change Institute. And that's run by a woman who worked for Gates in agriculture, a woman called Monica Zurich. So the connections are there. And again, you're back to Gates having his fingers in depopulation, in biotech, in Monsanto, Terminator seeds, in vaccines, in track and trace, in the health passport. Yeah. This one guy, and Tony Gosling was on before you today, and I asked Tony, who is this? Is Gates a front man, or is he somehow, is a lot of this his idea, or is he just implementing other people's ideas?
It's a good question. And what was the answer that Tony got?
Well, Tony reckoned that he's a front man, that there are people pulling the strings far above Gates, people that, whose names we might never find out. How do you see that?
Well, I think that's probably true. But it's both. He stands to make billions himself from vaccines around the world, which will depopulate Africa, reduce fertility in Africa and indeed the whole world, and kill some people directly, because that's the statistics of his vaccine show that more people die earlier than the ones who haven't had the vaccines. And they die from other things in which they're supposed to be vaccinated on, because their immune systems are reduced. So he stands to make billions personally. He doubtless gets a big ego trip from going around all over the world ordering people to do things which he doesn't understand himself, because he's in no way a health person, let alone a physicist or a climate scientist or anything. He's just a person with money, turns up in Imperial College, puts some money on the table, and they say yes, which is a utter disgrace. I mean, modern universities, as I said, are part of the political spectacle now. And these things like World Weather Attribution, whatever. I mean, you know, I could set up an organisation called World Weather Attribution Initiative. It's a nonsense. It's the sound world-ish and therefore important. Like the World Health Organization, which is better known as Bill Gates' health organization. But, you know, it's got the name world in front of it. So I would have to say, stupid politicians, and there are many of them, will follow it because they think it's of world importance. Well, it is of world importance, but it's only because they follow it.
We used to talk over the years about the revolving door between politics and big business and politics.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing a revolving door of academics who've actually worked for Bill Gates' organisations.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing. Yeah. Bill Gates is kind of supplanted the World Health Organization, and he's kind of supplanted politics now. He is an
Absolutely.
Institution, and we're seeing people everywhere that have had something to do with him. So the revolving door now is Gates as an entity almost. It's remarkable, and you think, why? Forget the fact that the BBC is covering it up because the BBC is taking money from Gates. And it's not the
That's
only...
That's right. Yeah, ahead, the BBC please. Take money from him. Well, everybody. I mean, it's not just Imperial College. It's Oxford University. Whole lots of them take loads of money. Grants here, grants there and everywhere.
Piers Corbyn is our guest. Lots and lots of comments on this. Let me read you one from Greg, who's in China. And he's asking about what does Piers think of the oddity of getting arrested for peaceful protest, yet no action was taken against Black Lives Matter protesters?
Well, it is an oddity, and of course a circuit judge recognised it was an oddity when we appealed against my bail restrictions. Namely, I'm not allowed to go visit anywhere in Westminster until my court case, which is now October the 23rd. But the judge said, look, this is ridiculous. He's going to lift all restrictions on my bail. I just have to turn up at court, that is all. And I can go to Westminster as I wish. And I indeed have done on a few occasions and spoken on megaphones and so forth. And the police have allowed it. But it is very interesting, of course, because for a month, they were arresting anybody like me who spoke. And May the 16th, they arrested 19 people, and May the 30th, they arrested 16 people for assembling in groups of more than two, which at Speaker's Corner, which, you know, Speaker's Corner, the symbol of British
free speech, yeah.
democracy and the right to protest. So. Anyway, after the BLM action, they then toned down and said, OK, we can't enforce this, these 2 metre rules and or groups of two things. But it's interesting how it ended, because, you see, our protests were getting bigger. So at some point, it would have been impossible to impose these conditions. And then it would have been that people protesting against attacks on the right to protest broke their government intentions, and that would have been dynamite. So it was convenient for the government, in a way, to have Black Lives Matter breaking the rules and then them giving in, because that was also used. Obviously, you see, it wasn't the people who were protesting about protest us, but it gave them a convenient excuse to do other things. You see, after the BLM protest, Sadiq Khan announces he's going to review all statues in London, and then lots of people in the north of England and the Midlands go berserk and say, we ain't having this, and we're going to march to London or come to London. So they did the following weekend. And then there were set piece confrontations, which the police, I know for a fact they were letting people in lines in certain places, and they were just going along to make trouble. They exaggerated what happened, and then the next day said, too many protests, we're going to have to take back the right to protest. In other words, they're preparing people mentally for martial law. It was all very convenient. So the BLM protest, I mean, not to say that individuals involved in BLM are not serious about, you know, defending the rights for black people, absolutely. But of course, who's behind them is none other than George Soros, who doesn't care a damn about anybody's rights because he makes billions from people not having rights around the world.
And when his name comes up, inevitably people say, oh, that's anti-Semitic. But the fact is, his Open Society Foundation has given huge amounts of money
they
to.
Can say what they like.
Exactly,
but, you know,
yeah.
He's an anti-Semitic Jewish person, if you like, because of his history as a youth. But, you know, I mean, it's just a diversion to make those sort of claims. It really is.
Tell me about a lot of people trying to get hold of you tonight, Piers. Tell me about
It doesn't matter. I'm trying to put this phone somewhere where it can't be heard.
No worries, no panic. Look, that's the beauty of live radio. Let me remind our listeners, Piers Corbyn is our guest today. the physicist and meteorologist, very, very qualified man, a very capable man. When they talk about climate change on television, by rights, they should be inviting him on to counter the claims made by others. But I think since, I know you've done some talk radio with Mike Graham or somebody like that. But since,
But
since
I've been on him with a couple of times. To be fair to them, that's good. But they got worse people now on LBC. I mean, my God, some of those guys they're interviewing are just, well, anyway, they go up and down, don't they? But Mike Graham's interviews I found quite constructive.
Well, he was open-minded. It's funny you bring up LBC because LBC is doing something very similar to what we've seen at the BBC in recent years. In recent months, they have decided now that on certain issues, there isn't any genuine debate to be had anymore, that the answer is settled. There's been some extraordinary monologues by people like James O'Brien, you know, saying that why should he or anybody else have to entertain, you know, he didn't mention you, of course, Piers, but why should he have to entertain somebody like Piers Corbyn? You know, I've got 10,000 scientists over here saying that climate change is going to kill us all if we don't deal with it. So I shouldn't have to listen to anybody else who says anything differently.
But why hasn't it killed us already then? But of course, the reason is the facts show that CO2 levels follow temperature.
And on that,
A million years of data show that.
And you've said this a million times, and I've researched this as best as I can, and very prominent scientists and geologists back you up. They've been saying this for many years. Tell us about the Maunder minimum then. At the end of this decade, I had Valentina Zharkova on the programme, the mathematician, saying that she believes it's a racing certainty that at the end of this decade, rather than have the catastrophic warming effects that we've been told we will have, the flip side, we will actually have a great cooling period, a number of years where the temperatures will be very, very cold. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. And of course, she's just repeating things people have already said. Oh, can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear, yeah.
It's all right. Yep. She's repeating things people already said. She did a bit of mathematical analysis of data to show that this is likely true. And she had a good way of analysing magnetic activity on the sun, which reinforced what everybody said. She then went a bit too far and made some incorrect assumptions about the subject known as celestial mechanics involving orbits of planets around the sun and so forth. But you know, and then she got lambasted for that. But, you know, that apart, the important thing she says is, and she reinforces what everyone else has said, is it is going to get very cold. And that is in line with other people.
And if this occurs, and I think it's obviously monumental, it'll be, I mean, what will that do to those who have been proclaiming for the last couple of decades?
Well, they would say warm is cold. They come up with, oh, yes, it is cold there, yes, but that's why it's going to be warm here or something. Or the sea is hiding the heat and it's all going to come out soon, which, of course, is contrary to the basic laws of thermodynamics. So they will talk nonsense upon nonsense upon nonsense. But the problem is there will be world food shortages. Now, my estimation is that the powers that be, the people behind Bill Gates, know this already. So they're preparing to depopulate the world for smaller amounts of food, when what they ought to be doing is preparing on how to grow more. But they're not doing that. I mean, wheat production in America, because of North America's shorter season now, has gone down, and a whole lot of things around the world. We will point out it's as we predicted, but they will lie and lie and lie again. So I just urge people to look at the actual science. Come on to weatheraction.com.
Weatheraction.com, might blame...
Our pamphlet on man-made climate change does not exist, which has had fantastic reviews from people who've read it.
And that's free, by the way, but if you do use weatheraction....
Oh, no, we charge £2 for that. £2 is a steal.
Yeah. £2 is a steal. Yeah. So tell me this, then. What's to say that when we enter the Maunder minimum period, what's to say that... First of all, you might very well be right. They might say the heat's gone into the sea. They might say this, they might say that. But we think back to some of these disaster blockbuster Hollywood movies that predicted horrible you know, consequences of climate change. One of them is a movie made by Roland Emmerich called The Day After Tomorrow with Dennis Quaid, which imagines climate change making the world freezing cold. Who's to say that in 2030 they don't say, oh, it's freezing now because of climate change? Simple as that.
Well, they will say that as well. Of course they will. But that movie itself is scientifically
rubbish.
Impossible
yeah.
because they've got, you know, they're kind of instant freezing. Well, you see, there's a huge heat capacity in the sea. So it's a slow process. But that having been said, on the scale of thousands of years, you know, that is... there will be huge changes. We're not talking about that now. We're talking about, you know, a decade or decades of cooling into a mini ice age, like the Maunder Minimum, which happened when the Thames froze over often. So we'll have those same conditions. It'll be more difficult for the Thames to freeze because it is dredged, but, you know, it will freeze in the upper reaches of beyond Teddington for sure.
Final question for you today. Thanks for doing this today, by the way. I know you've got lots to do.
No problem.
It's always good to have you on. Love having you on. Two things, by the way. I mentioned in the monologue, I was pretty disgusted at the way your brother was treated by the media this afternoon.
Yes, it's disgusting,
isn't it? Just in case our listeners don't know, allegations have been made that the Labour Party were given a document last year by elements in Russia. Now, this was a very important document because the document demonstrated that the government was lying about US.
Okay.
Well, the Boris Johnson's government was telling lies about the NHS. The government was telling the people that they had nothing to worry about the NHS. But a leaked document showed that the government was lying, and Jeremy Corbyn did what any semi-decent, half-decent politician would do. He said to the public, look, they are lying. The NHS is in danger if the US does a trade deal with the UK.
Jeremy Corbyn did nothing wrong, right?
And there's no two ways about that. Today they've said that the Russians leaked it. Jeremy was followed to his house today by journalists asking him if he was ashamed and if he would apologise for being complicit in all this bullshit. It's disgusting the levels the media have sunk in this country, isn't it? It's disgusting.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they like to blame Russia for everything, but I mean, whatever report came from anywhere...
it doesn't matter where it came from.
In Britain, because it's measured in Britain. You know, that's where the data is. So, you know. Anyway, I don't believe these Russian flames. They just make them up all the time.
Well, and you know what? Whether the Russians did or whether the Russians didn't, no politician in the world getting information that was factual wouldn't speak about it.
No, that's right.
To have guys from BBC shouting at him when he was getting off his bike today, asking him if he regretted, you know, being complicit. He's not complicit in anything. It's shocking the media here. It makes me sick.
Where does the BBC get information? Yeah, I'm sure the BBC gets all sorts of anonymous and other
tips. Of course it does, and they don't
care
where they come from.
Into news, but they don't reveal their sources.
Tell me this before we go. You're doing a lot of work on 5G and how 5G, what it's going to mean for people and society.
Yes.
Do you have any real hope that some sort of spanner will emerge in the works that they won't get to roll out 5G in the manner they do? Because they're cock-a-hoop about this stuff. They're really gung-ho. Advertisements on radio and television. You know, it's been... I think you educated me. You told me, and it turned out you were telling... You got it bang on. You said to me that they used the lockdown to expedite the erection of some of these towers.
And they did that.
So, I mean, is the game lost with 5G, or is there some optimism? What do you think?
No, there is some optimism because more people are realising that it's not a question of intensity, it's a question of frequencies. And with the 5G, there's a bigger range of frequencies they can use, especially higher frequencies, which can transform your cells in certain energy levels. And that is what causes mountain sickness under radiation. There has been quite a lot of success in different areas, like I was in Milton Keynes, where there's an application to build a tower, and it was turned down by the council. They refused it. Of course, there's going to be another application for a similar tower further down the road and so forth, but people are waking up on 5G, and, well, it's very important they do. And these towers have to be taken down because it is crucial to the deep state operation to, one, make you ill and turn people's illness on and off at the crucial moment, and two, to communicate and control. You see, you actually need 5G to get an image of somebody walking in the shop so they can know within 5 seconds who this person is and everything.
Yeah, yeah,
facial
yeah.
recognition instantly. Now, this happens in China and will happen where there is 5G installed. And it is very bad, very dangerous, and very anti-human and anti-democratic and controlling. If you come on weatheraction.com or follow me at Piers_Corbyn, you can find links which show the clear relationship between 5G installation and COVID figures. Official figures, doubtless exaggerated, but, you know, probably uniformly exaggerated in different parts of the world, in different parts of each country. So they do bear out a very clear correlation. It doesn't, probably everybody would get ill from 5G if it's intense enough. At low intensity, it's a certain percentage get ill, but the crucial thing is the frequencies. And I think the thing to remember is the big telecom operation is the new tobacco lobby, and they will lie and lie and lie again. And there's been no independent testing supported by the industry to show whether these things are safe or not. And the independent testing that has been done, not funded by the industry, but funded completely independently, show that there is grave dangers of this new stuff.
Great to have you back on.
People to check it all out. Themselves.
Check it all out. I mean, one final note of positivity. I do meet people regularly enough who've heard of you and the work, and they've heard of this programme. But I did come across a conversation a few weeks back about Wheast Lane in Salford, where there were or there are plans to put a 5G tower or mast.
Yeah.
And I heard some people talking about it, and they weren't happy about it. And
no.
I said, you know, I kind of butted in. I said, "All right, did you hear of these people? No. Did you ever hear of a radio show around here, the Richie Allen radio show? No. All right. I said, okay. Where did you get into worrying about this then?" And it turns out that they have long been skeptical about, you know, electricity pylons and electromagnetic radiation. And they're genuinely concerned about it. And basically, the gist of it was, these were working people, professional people, and they were saying over their dead body would a mast be put there.
Yeah.
And I thought,
right.
Well done.
Well,
you know?
That's right. Really good. Well,
and then I told them about Piers Corbyn.
And the discussion.
Well, this is it.
And have it taken down, you know. Have it taken down.
Do it.
But, you know, a bit of direct action might not be amiss. I mean, I've said to people in Black Lives Matter, look, you know, you're busy pulling down statues, but why not pull down something if you're going to pull things down, which was not even erected with democratic consent? I mean, these statues are mostly put up with democratic consent, but these 5G towers have just been put up without any agreement whatsoever. So they ought to be taken down.
weatheraction.com and Piers, lots of information there. Follow Piers on Twitter. It's at Piers _Corbyn, because there you'll get a heads up about all of these protests that are coming up. And if you are in the jurisdiction and you can get out there, go and support free speech and go and meet Piers Corbyn. He's a very nice fella and he'll be happy to say hello to you. Piers, you're a gentleman. Thanks for coming on, as always.
Great stuff, mate.
Can't wait to
speak
to you again.
Keep it up, Richie.
You too, buddy. Bye for now. The one and only Piers Corbyn, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Thursday's programme, the last live programme of the week. So it is. I had an email today, and there was a few tweets today asking me, did I lose my bloody mind last night? Talking about Naomi Campbell. This is what sort of a week it's been. It's not even that I've introduced new software or anything. Things have just gone wrong this week. I was doing a monologue last night, and I had a skit lined up. I had a skit lined up that was actually quite funny, but I screwed it up because it's one of those weeks. Again, I'm channeling Eugene Levy. What a week I'm having, he says. But no, I was doing a skit last night that involved a TV show that we would know in Ireland and in the UK as Family Fortunes, one time presented by Bob Monkhouse, one time presented by Les Dawson, I believe. Am I right in saying that? And I suppose most famously by Les Dennis, the Scouse comedian. And it was famous for families going on there, competing against other families and answering questions that were based on surveys. In other words, we asked 100 people, name a fruit that's coloured green, name a green coloured fruit, you get the picture kind of a thing. And I was mentioning some of these answers last night, and I made a complete bags of it because the system crashed in the middle of it. But some of the answers were quite funny. That's the answer to that, Naomi Campbell. And Naomi Campbell also came up because of the decision by this sculptor, Quinn, mentioned by Tony Gosling earlier on, the sculptor who has withdrawn his own blood and used it in his own artwork, which apparently has satanic undertones. I've seen some of the pictures. It's not great stuff. Let's be honest about it. But they did put a statue of a woman that nobody ever heard of called Jen Reed, because when Colston's statue was thrown into the drink, Jen Reed jumped up and started gyrating on the empty plinth like a two-bit pole dancer, to be honest. And she started giving the Black Power thing with the fist. And it was her statue that was briefly on the plinth yesterday. And I mentioned a number of famous black women from the UK, successful for various different things. Obviously modelling, Naomi Campbell in business. She's done well in business. Baroness Amos. I mentioned a few. Sade in music. Many more. I was probably showing my subconscious racism, you know, because I could have cheated. I could have went onto Google and basically taken a list of famous black women from the UK. I didn't do that. So when thinking of famous black women off the top of my head during a live radio programme, I could only come up with Sade and Naomi Campbell and Baroness Amos as well, because I'm just a racist, you see. Anyway, there you go. Right, we will speak again, you and me, on Sunday for Sunday View at 11 o'clock. We'll look through the Sunday papers. We'll listen to some of the talk shows on Sunday morning, as we do. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to a few days off. Hayden Hewitt is not the Mae West. Now, there very well may be a Thursday big show with Graham Booth on his own. So do look out for triggerwarning.tv and the YouTube channel Trigger Warning TV. But Hayden is not feeling the best. I'm not sure if he'll be on. He might be on. He might not be on. It's always worth checking him out. He's very interested these days, Hayden, in the attempts by minor attracted persons to gain some credibility using social media. So he's doing some good investigative work, Hayden Hewitt. So I know my friend Kelly in Cork will be interested in that. Minor attracted persons. It's a nice roundabout way of saying pederast. But then they claim, well, if I've never abused a child, you can't call me a paedophile. And, you know, we're just human beings as well. And, you know, we're vulnerable groups as well and all of that. So he's looking into what's really going on behind that. And he's doing a good job of it. That's our own Hayden Hewitt. So check out triggerwarning.tv, youtube.com/triggerwarning. All right then. Okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Have you anything else to say to us, Richie? No, I don't. So I'm going to close out the problem. Jesus Christ. Here's Bob Seger with a song called We've Got Tonight. Have a great weekend, right? And speak to you on Sunday at 11 o'clock. Glad to see the back of this week. Bye now. Thanks to Piers and Tony Gosling, by the way.